بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. حضرت سید احمد رفاعی رحمۃ اللہ علیہ says that I have traversed this path that is leading up to Allah Ta'ala. I have seen the ups and the downs. I have seen the length and the width. I have seen the highs and the lows. Every aspect, every dimension of this path I have seen. And after seeing this, that is the path that is leading to Allah Ta'ala, I come to this conclusion that the quickest and easiest path that will bring you to Allah Ta'ala is the path of fana. Now, generally our problem is that when we hear these terms, then we translate it according to our own understanding. Literally, when we speak about fana, fana means destruction. So we say now we destroy ourselves. Self-destruction is suicide, haram. So when they speak about fana, then what do they refer to? So every science has got its own terminology. And it is important to understand the terminology of that science. Before you just jump in, understand what it is speaking about. You get the proper understanding, and then you're bored, then you don't have any disappointment. But you just have half the understanding, and you're not bothered about understanding it properly in its proper context, then after some years you begin to understand it, then obviously it causes disappointment. Then every language has its own expressions, idiomatic expressions, and those expressions must be understood according to that language. Now the problem here generally is that people don't understand these terms. They run bayan here, some article there, something in the internet, and then they made a khichdi of it in their minds, and then according to the mixture that they have made, they want that to conform to the mixture that they made in their minds. Then they create a big confusion. So either you know it very well, or you don't know it. If you don't know it, or you know it half, say, I don't know it at all. Explain that to me. I don't know it, and I'm not going to employ my reasoning, my brains against yours. So when you come to this fana, this, according to Sayyid Ahmad Rifai, rahmatullah alayhi, he says this is the most rapid, the most quick, the most expedient. It will bring you in the quickest time. But then what is fana? In short, when we talk about fana, then fana refers to annihilating your own opinions. Leave your opinions aside, one side. And then it's a joy for the instructor, and in time it's a joy for this learner as well. And if the learner didn't learn fana, then it's a problem for him, and he creates a problem for the instructor, because this, why this, why this, when, what, why, when, what. So it becomes a problem. Imagine a child coming into the nursery, and the teacher has to say that A is written like this, and it's not like B. So the student asks the teacher that why is A written like A, why isn't it written like B, and why is B not written like C? If he keeps on asking these questions, that teacher is going to get frustrated. He says, all right, I think you're too clever for me, you go to some other class. So the right thing for the student was just to move along with the teacher. In time he'll understand the thing himself. So exactly the same here, you need to have the degree of fana for you to make any type of progress, any type of progress that you are anticipating and you are hoping for. In proportion to your fana, you will see the progress. And then it doesn't only refer to tasawuf, in fact it refers to every field of deen. That level of fana that you're going to show is the level that you want to progress. And you see our mashayikh and buzurgan ad-din, then this was the very salient feature in them, fana'iyat. Sayyid Sulaiman Nadwi rahmatullah alayh, father of Dr. Sulaiman, very great saint of his time. So he had spent some time with Muhammad Thamisab rahmatullah alayh. And around that time, he was known to be about the best alim in India and in Arab countries. When he came in to Thanabon, he stayed a day or 2 days, and then Mawlana went and left him. So he asked Mawlana for some parting advice. Mawlana told him that you are such a great scholar, the Arab recognizes you, the non-Arab recognize you, and you asking me for a parting advice. Said, yes, definitely, I want some parting advice from you. Mawlana says that when he said this, I said, I only learned one lesson from of my elders. Only one lesson I learned. And the lesson that I learned from my elders, jitna bhi ho sake, apne aap ko mita do. As much as you can, then just annihilate yourself. I've learned all my learning, my struggling, my sacrifice, everything. Person who's authored 1,000 books, up till this day, you see his kitabs are an essential part of every library. When they speak about his Bayanul Quran, the likes of Hazrat Maulana Anwar Shah Kashmir rahmatullahi alayhi say, ye pure mutaqaddimin ke tafsiron ka majmua hai. That it is a collection of the tafsirs of all the mutaqaddimin's tafsirs. So, such a brilliant person, and then he says, that what I've learned in all this, I've learned that as much as you can, then annihilate yourself. Now what is this annihilating? Annihilating is your own suggestions, your own opinions. Then as I say, if a person has got it, then it's a beauty. It's wonderful working with the person. You are enjoying the work. And in time to come, the learner also enjoys the work. Because he's learned to conform, he's learned to agree. And he's not going to object, he's not going to ask. He's just going to move. Whatever the sheikh is going to say, he's just going to move. So this is that level of annihilation. One nawab. Now this annihilation will come in different respects, see. It will come in different ways. But I'm just showing you some incidents to elucidate what you mean when you say fana, right? So it's a nawab. Nawab, like in our terms you would say, like how you have an induna, you know. Induna of a place. When we call him a boss in our language, right? So now, he's a very wealthy person. Induna is in charge of a whole town sometimes. He's not only in charge, but he's owning the whole town. He's got so much of right and authority in the town, like he can take life and he can spare life. He's got so much of authority. So he writes up to us more time. He says, I want to come and spend some time in your presence, in your company. And I'm going to come and not going to have any khadims also. I will do everything myself. I will not allow any khadim to accompany me. Now, these indunas, they have at any given time 20, 30 people serving them. And what he says, that I'm going to come and I'm going to come all alone. I'm not going to allow any khadim to be accompanying me. Now, Mawlana's reply goes up to him and he says to him, that tum aate ho, اور نوابیت کو لے کر کے آتے ہو تم آؤ اور خادم کو ساتھ کر کے لے آؤ. He says, you are coming and you're coming with a boss mentality. You come as per my instruction and you come and allow one khadim to accompany you. See, you are going to totally annihilate your opinions. You will take the opinion from us. You take the instruction from us. Leave your opinion aside. Now that it's a beauty, it's wonderful to work with such a person. Otherwise, you're not like that. And you want to be like that, then don't pretend. Then you tell, oh, just do the simple things. You are not on that class where you want to come of that fana. You don't belong to that class. Then don't you try and imitate that class. Then you are still in the primary level and you will remain stuck up in that primary level. You're not going to progress. So the Shaykh also understands that this is your level and he won't want to then initiate you. He won't want to take you up because he's not, it's my یہ پنچ وقت کا نماز پڑھتا ہے بس کافی ہے. He's doing namazes, he's just leaving out the haram and all that, that's enough for him, just leave him at that level. Because he doesn't have the capacity for that. He doesn't have the understanding and the reasoning for that. I'm going to take him and he's got you got 10 questions in every step. At every step he's got 10 questions, and how can I take him forward? I can't take him forward. Everything he's questioning, my integrity. That patient that is coming to a doctor, he can't keep on questioning the doctor for his integrity. That you have a fever, this is the tablet that you need to take. So he comes and tells the doctor, for example, but I went to that doctor recommended something else. And I went to the third doctor, he recommended something else. By the first time, perhaps the doctor will be quite considerate and say, alright, you know what, this is why I have given this. But if the second and the third time, if he says the same things, the doctor will say, you see, you carry on, because in the same time I can make 10 times that amount of money. That's why he'll tell him, but you're taking so much of my time, you're giving me 100 rands, but you're taking work from me for 1,000 rands. So you carry on, you already let me continue with my business. That will be the response of the doctor. Now, you want to do so little work, but the questions that we are asking is so much. The objections we are raising, that is so much. If you had the capacity, you wouldn't have asked that question. And the dalil, the proof of the capacity is you would have done. You wouldn't have asked. You just receive one ishara, and that ishara is sufficient and you're moving. So now then the Shaykh also feels his heart opens up, mashallah. May I open up to this person. Let me open up to this person. Hazrat Sayyid Ahmad Shaheed Sahib Rahmatullah. Let's not sure what is fana'iyat. You see, I'll come to the topic inshallah. But if I don't get this straight in the mind, then you're not going to understand it. And when you don't understand it, maybe Allah Pak gives one person or two persons the tawfiq to come to that fana'iyat of that level. Why deprive that person? So there was some type of a function in Sayyid Shah Abdul Aziz Sahib Rahmatullah's residence. Sayyid Sahib was his student. When there was this function going on, so they had to put up some canopies and all that. And one canopy was not just sitting right. So Sayyid Sahib Rahmatullah is coming from a very great background, not an ordinary background, very great. Like people that had influenced Indian history. They made Indian history. The background that he's coming in. But when he came in like an ordinary servant. He doesn't have the type of memory that I've come with such a background, that I'm a Sayyid from the Khandan or the Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. No. I've come as a student. When I've come as a student, then I must behave as a student. I mustn't have any high expectations. I must be absolutely behaving myself exactly like how the rest of the crowd is behaving. I don't want anything additional. Now there's the problem that canopy needs to be seated. It needs to be set up, and it's not just getting settled. So Sayyid Sahib Rahmatullahi pulled up his pants up to his knees. He put out his kurta and he climbed up the tree and he set it. One shot, one two strokes and he set it. When Hazrat Shah Abdul Aziz Sahib Rahmatullahi's brother saw this, he was very impressed, very, very impressed. And he was so impressed, Shah Abdul Qadir Sahib Rahmatullahi, who did this Muzihul Quran. Up till now it's running about the best tafsirs that you get. Bayanul Quran, Muzihul Quran is about the best tafsirs. You can't find an answer to that. So he was the one that did the Muzihul Quran. He spent 40 years in i'tikaf. And the ulama of the time, they say that if the Quran had to be revealed in Urdu language, it would have been word for word Muzihul Quran. As though every word of that Muzihul Quran is an inspiration. So exact and so precise is the translation that they say that if the Quran were to be revealed in the Urdu language, it would have been in the language of Muzi of Quran. So you understand now, understand where these people are coming from. Hence, Hazrat Shah Abdul Qadir Sahib Rahmatullahi says to his brother, elder brother, Shah Abdul Aziz Sahib Rahmatullahi, that unko mere sabool kar do, just hand him over to me, inshallah let me do the training. The training, the soul, let me do the training. So Shah Abdul Aziz Sahib Rahmatullahi, that's the elder brother, said, surely you take him. And there wasn't a frown on the face of Shah Abdul Qadir Sahib, on Shah Sayyid Ahmad Shaheed Sahib Rahmatullahi. You know, I came to you, your khidmat, not your brother's khidmat. I came to make it my Islam by your hands, not by his hands. So why are you dumping me onto someone else? Why are you handing me over to someone else? You see that Islam is going on. He came for Shah Abdul Aziz Sahib, and he's the highest authority in Hadith in India at that time. There's nobody that is at his level. At his level, there's nobody. I'm saying we're India, but if you look at the history at that zamana, worldwide, you can't find a person like Shah Abdul Aziz Sabrahman Taib. Worldwide, international. Can't find a person like him. Like how Sheikh Muhammad Zakaria Sabrahman Taib, the world at that time, you can't find a luminary like him. Right? Can't find. With that type of influence, that type of knowledge, in every respect, whether in tasawuf, tafsir, hadith, fiqh, etc. Man is so comprehensive, so complete. So he was like that. So, Shah Abdul Aziz Sahib Rahmatullahi readily accepted. And Sayyid Ahmad Shaheed Sahib Rahmatullahi, there was no resistance in him. Anyway, Sayyid Ahmad Shaheed Sahib Rahmatullahi was shown that you stay in this masjid here, at this point you must complete your zikrs. And the zikrs that they would give was not like how we doing zikr, 10,000, 5,000, 6,000. They would start them off with about 25,000 and bring them up to 150,000. Right. You'll say, if I have to do that amount of zikr, mera to khana gaya, I can't eat, I can't drink, I can't go to the toilet, I can't sleep, nothing. But where there's a will, there's a way. So anyway, he started him off and he said, told him that you sit at that corner of the masjid and you complete. Here there was more work. Talking is just pure necessity. Now you're coming to tell your halal, you don't say, no, you know, I was walking, then one bus came, then I jumped into the bus, then I sat one, and I sat here, and then there was a girl in front, and then I had to avoid my, I don't need to know all that. Just come straight, hey, I think I messed it up here. In the bus there was a girl. And you need to say what you did after that. What was your level of resistance? You closed your eyes straight away, or you stared at her. So, hey, I stumbled. And the Sheikh will tell you, I do this. Then you will never commit the mistake again. Now then it's a pleasure working with the person. Hey, I messed it up again this day, today, tomorrow I did again. So by, we'll then put you onto that primary grade. Just go to the primary grade, move on like that. But every day you're making the same mistake, now can I take you to? You can't add 1 plus 1. Can I take you to 10 times 10? I can't, how can I take you to that? It'll be stupid of me to take you up to 10 times 10 when you can't add 1 plus 1. In order to understand and master 10 times 10, you need to be able to add 1 plus 1. You can't do that, then how can you ask me, how can you make demands that take me to a higher level? But you can't add this 1 plus 1 still. Now why do you want me to take you to 10 times 10? We can mess up there. So you see, the mashayikh sometimes they can't take you. Why? Because you're not doing the introductory work. Small, simple work you're not doing. When you're not doing the simple work, then how can they take you up? Can't take you up. See, when the Sahaba Kiram, when they're given an instruction, then that's the first instruction and the last instruction. After that, Rasulullah did not have to repeat that instruction to them. Some said it, but it is that's going to be. One woman, she had her menses for the first time, and then she asked Nabi Sallam, or whatever happened, but Nabi Sallam told her, this is how you're going to have the bath. You take salt water, and you will wash yourself with that. Perhaps she was in a journey, and in a journey you can't find something to remove those smells. You know, when a woman is bathing from menses, etc., sometimes some offensive smells come out. So she is feeling ashamed of her husband and all that because of the smell that is coming out. So how is she to remove that? So say take salt water, you know, and that will clear all that up. So she held on to that so strongly that for the rest of her life, she's taking a bath, she's adding salt to the water. And it didn't just end at that point. She made a wasiyat, she made a bequest that when I die and you are bathing me, then you see that you add salt to that water that you are bathing me with. Now they hold so firmly. So then it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. You feel so nice. MashaAllah, once I told him, and it's on. They're moving. Then I want to instruct the person more and more and more. And when you employ reasoning, and you come and do something else, said, hey, bye. I can't work with you so well, like you would expect. It's not going to be with your expectation. I want to keep you behind. See, it's not a good example to show you, but how else can I impress upon you? In that Muta, Ghazwa Muta, right? Nabi Sallam had sent 3 Sahaba Kiram as Amirs. Therefore they call it Jaishul Umara. That the Amirs were pre-appointed by Nabi Sallam. Hazrat Zayd ibn Harisa, then Jafar ibn Abi Talib, and Abdullah ibn Rawaha radiyallahu anhu, right? And Abdullah ibn Rawaha radiallahu anhu was already told, they were already told by some Jews now, that when a Nabi ever did such a prediction, then all these three people passed away. When he said that this is going to be the Amir, if he passes on, then he's going to be the Amir. And if he passes on, then he's going to be the Amir. Then if a Nabi ever made this type of a statement, then all three passed away. So they were quite certain now they're going to pass away, they're going to be Shaheed. So he's thinking to himself now, this is my last and my final mulaqat with Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. Tomorrow is a Friday. I have got a speedy horse. I'll catch up with the rest. Now, who won't long to read the Jummah namaz with Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam in Masjid al-Nabawi with all the sahabi? Who won't want to do it? So he applied all his reasoning and he went up and he performed the Jummah namaz with Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. Right? You can't say that Jummah namaz is not fi sabil. It's fi sabil as well. Imam Bukhari Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi says, there's an old section in Bukhari Sharif, that a person prepares himself and comes for the Jummah, Mashiyan. Then huwa fi sabilillah, he's also in the path of Allah Ta'ala. Rasulullah spots him in the namaz and asks him, but when are you supposed to be with that Jamaat? Yes. But ya Rasulullah, I heard about this and this is my last Jummah and I don't want to miss this occasion, this opportunity. Well, what's the distance between you and them? Half a day. Well, then that's going to be the distance between you and the entry of Jannah. They're going to enter Jannah in 500 years before you. Half a day in the Akhirat is 500 years. So you see, this employing of your reasoning. One slip and you employ your reasoning and where, from where to where. Obviously it's a Sahabi, so you can't run down the Sahabi. His niyat was right. He calculated to the best of his ability. His calculations didn't work out like he had expected to be. Right? But when Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam has given an instruction, just go with it. That's called that fana'iyat. So we're talking about Sayyid Ahmad Shaheed Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi. Sayyid Ahmad Shaheed Rahmatullah Alayhi was shown that you sit at this point and you complete your zikr there. So anyway, continued, couple of months continued. One day Shah Abdul Qadir Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi is taking a walk on that end and he sees him making zikr, it's pouring, rain, it's pouring, and he's still there at that same spot. And with itminan, he's completing his zikrs. One time he told him to do zikrs, and then with itminan for the 3-4 months. Now, Mawla, today I didn't do my zikrs, Mawla. Today I didn't do my namaz with Jamaat. I messed up today, I looked at that girl. I have to say, alright, go again. Nurani Qaida again. Yes, sir, Nal Quran again. First part, Tasheel series, first part again. I could have put you in the second part, but if I put you into the second part, then you don't know the first part. How can I put you into the second part? You have to go and master that first part again for me to put you into the second part. So when Shah Abdul Qadir seen this, then he says to him, you know, it was far more than what I imagined. You are far greater than what I expected. Right? And he just grew, and he just grew, and he just grew, until he became the Mujaddid of that time. Like how you have Muhammad Ilyas Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi, one of the Mujaddids of the 13th century, right? Then the Mujaddid of the 12th century was Sayyid Ahmad Shaheed Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi. Now this is that unique aspect of Fana'iyat. And I say in every department of deen that Fana'iyat has to be there. If you want to see that level of progress, you want to see yourself moving, then you need that level of Fana'iyat. Al-Muftar used to give an incident of one Buzurg. He trained his murid for a couple of good months and thereafter he dispatched him to Multan. So anyway, he's moving on to Multan. On his way, he comes to one town and one of these sadhus, you know, this Hindi sadhus is these people that go through this type of a spiritual exercise. So through his spiritual strength, etc., he tried to attack this Muslim that is going to Multan. Right? We shouldn't underestimate these people here, right? Like you have exercised physically, right? You have got physical strength. Some people, they exercise, but they exercise mentally. When they exercise mentally, they can affect you. They can affect you because they train themselves in that way. You train yourself physically, they have trained themselves mentally. And when they train themselves mentally, then they can do certain exercises. They can do certain things, right? Like how you get these people hypnotizing, how they do it, mesmerizing. then it's a mental ability that they master. When they specialize in that, then they can do certain things. They can overwhelm you into Hinduism, etc., etc. So you don't underestimate these things. And that is why just to read any site and any article is not the right thing. You can get mesmerized in one article. One article you read and you are moving in one line. And then you read one article. You just met up with some person that you are supposed to be meeting. And all the good that you had, and in one meeting it can just capsize you. Just capsize you. So quickly they can do it. So this is that mental training that they go through, and they train themselves and they train themselves that they bring themselves to that point. Now, in this day, where you see so much of confusion, one of the reasons for this confusion is this. You mix up with anybody, this person, that person, reading up this side, then you don't know that there are certain satanic effects in this. You don't know about it. You can't see it. It's so subtle that you can't see it. It's so discreet that you can't perceive it. But you're going through it, and then you get affected. Then the effect of it is so bad that you'll find a good person, straight, but he's got a doubt in his mind, he's got a reservation in his mind, and the reservation sometimes carries on for a year, 2 years, 5 years. So this morning someone came, between Islam and Christianity. This morning, educated persons, intelligent persons, between that now. Why, how it happened, meeting anybody, everybody, every site, anything goes with any person, with every person, then you inviting problem, you asking for problem. So anyway, this Buzurg trained his murid and he sent him up Multan. En route now he's meeting up with the sadhu. The sadhu is trying to strike him with his powers. This murid has sensed that someone is trying to strike me. So he didn't pay attention, he carried on. In the meanwhile, the sadhu saw that what I'm doing is just bouncing off. I'm trying to work onto him, but whatever I'm trying to work on him is just bouncing off back onto myself. So he said, now let me go and attack him personally, let me go up to him. He went up to him and he asked him, who are you? So he says, I am Abdul Rahman. And where are you off to? I am off to Multan. What do you say? And then he said, La ilaha illallah. But he said it with such a fervor that he struck the heart of this sadhu. And that sadhu, he couldn't contain it. When he couldn't contain it, he went to the whole of the town and said, but don't go on that path, there is one person, Abdul Rahman, going to Multan. And he's saying, La ilaha illallah. You know, he's giving invitation on behalf of that Muslim murid. In the meanwhile, the spirit that he was moving with, that spirit broke down. Now he realized, okay, that powerhouse that was supplying me that power, that there is some interruption. I don't see the type of spirit, I don't see the type of power, I don't see the type of strength that I was enjoying just now. So the right thing now is to go back to the powerhouse. Just now I'll lose out completely, let me go there. The Shaykh saw him and said, see, I didn't ask you to go and make tabligh en route. I asked you to go to Multan and go make tabligh there. Why did you do your own thing? What I asked you, you must go Multan. Then why did you go and do en route? Anyway, the Shaykh kept him back for 40 days or so. And after that, then he told him, now you go straight. See, he got 40 days, he got backwards again. He sent him straight. With the grace of Allah Ta'ala, now in the short duration, approximately 70 to 80,000 people accepted Islam at his hands. You see, now when they ask you to do this fana'iyat, that it's not just for show. They know what they are doing. But obviously, in this case, what happens is, the murid also needs to have a capacity, he needs to have a power, he needs to have a capacity for it. And the shaykh also has to be something. Then he can supply, and this person can receive. If the Shaykh is nothing as well, and the murid is nothing, then Allah Ta'ala dono ke par raham farmaye, may Allah Ta'ala be merciful on this person and this person. See? Yes, if the Shaykh is a power pack, and this person also has got a capacity, now, then it's excellent working, because he's got the capacity, and the Shaykh has got the strength, and he's passing on the strength to this person here, and then he's moving, so wherever he's going, he's an embodiment of hidayat. He's a personification of guidance, wherever he's moving. You just see him and you get inspired. You just see him and your life gets affected. There's a whole metamorphosis within your life, just seeing him. Now, everybody is not like that. Everybody can't assume himself like that. But I'm showing a precondition, what is required in this path. And the word that I used was fana'iyat. And then you look, I'm just tracing back in the Sahaba. Then you look back from the beginning of this universe, the whole beginning of the universe, Allah Ta'ala instructed Shaitan. Shaitan didn't want to come to fana'iyat. He went to his own logic and reasoning. That was the first lesson. Mankind had to be taught, that was the first lesson, fana'iyat. The Shaitan said, no, no. Ana khair, I'm better. Allah Ta'ala, it's against reasoning, it's against wisdom and philosophy, that the superior needs to prostrate himself for the one that is inferior. Ana khairum min, I am superior. Allah Ta'ala, you must reconsider. It's against philosophy and reasoning. How can you make such a command? I am superior. You know, I've been worshipping you, I've been serving you for 700,000 years. This man is just born here yesterday. You need to reconsider, you need to just change that old decision of yours. So, Allah Ta'ala saw that this person doesn't have that level of abdiyat fana'iyat. He doesn't have that, and not only he doesn't have it, but he's on denial. See, one is, you know, he made a mistake, he stumbled, and he's not in denial. Yeah, he stumbled, then over stumbling, then he's in denial. And how can you take the person? I ask you, the one that is acknowledging, right, you can still take him. But the one that stumbled, but he's in denial after that, can you move with him? You can't move with him. You can't move with him. How are you going to move with him? You're telling him, no, he's like this. No, I'm not like this. You're mistaken. Alright, then I'm mistaken. Then you carry on, you continue. The doctor says, you've got a heart problem. So, you are wrong. You're mistaken. You in denial, then suffer the consequence afterwards. Doctor is telling you he is specialized, he is trained for that, and he's told you after all the scannings and all the x-rays that you've got a heart problem, you've got four of your arteries blocked, you need to go for an operation, but he's in denial. So the shaitan was in denial. Allah Pak is telling him, all your arteries are blocked, finish. You can't move. So no, Allah Pak, you need to reconsider. You need to think about the whole thing again. So he's employing, again, what I showed you, that fana'iyat was reasoning. So he employed his reasoning against the command of Allah Ta'ala, where he took him, فَخْرُجْ مِنْهَا فَإِنَّكَ رَجِيمٌ. You're out of my regime. Rajim? You're out of my regime. Regime was in Jannah, you were there enjoying yourself. You're out of my regime, now finish. You're Rajim now. No more in the regime, now in the Rajim you are. So you need to understand. And then you see that fana'iyat featuring in Adam al-Islam. See, Allah is relating this both incidents together just to impress upon us by understand fana'iyat. Understand the reasoning for the stumbling, for the falling, for the decline, for the destruction of shaitan. And understand the reason of the progress and the continuous progress of your father Adam al-Islam. Understand this. Just wait up. See what's the common denominator. What's the common denominator? Allah tells him also, this is a mistake that you have made. So, without any hesitation, he's acceptant. The first step in the progress is to acknowledge. That's the first step. You acknowledge, then I can move with you. When you acknowledge that, I do have a heart problem, right? Then the doctor will operate and he will continue with you. But you're not acknowledging, you're in denial. How can he work with you? So, Adam al-Islam accepted straight away. Rabbana zalamna anfusana. Straight away. Allah Pak just had to say it and Rabbana, straight away. Then he gave in. Straight away he gave in. Allah Pak just had to say it and he gave in straight away. Then he didn't hesitate, he didn't pull back, he didn't go into denial. Straight away he accepted. When he went straight, then Allah Pak says, Fatalakka Adamu min Rabbi kalimatin fatabali. I see you, I'll look at you with grace. I'll look at you favorably. What else can Adam al-Islam ask for? Allah is saying, I'll look at you with grace. I'll look at you with my bounty and my favors. Can he ask for anything better? For that whole reward and that whole progress came about. Where it started off with acknowledgement with fana'iyat. He had that fana'iyat and it took him. Shaitan went on to denial. He refused that fana'iyat and it brought him to the lowest of the lowest. You couldn't expect something worse. He went to the lowest of the low because of the same common denominator that is fana'iyat. You see, in the beginning of time, then you see Ibrahim al-Islam, again, the same thing, same, exactly the same lesson. Allah Pak is telling him through a dream. You know, and dream is such a thing, to ke uske andar ta'wil karne ki bohut zyada gunjaish hai. There's a lot of scope there to give an explanation, you know. to make an explanation from this side, that side. There's a lot of scope for that. But when Allah Ta'ala speaks about Adam Ibrahim al-Islam, and he speaks to him through the dream, there was a lot of scope for him making his own explanation. No, perhaps this is the meaning, that is the meaning. But he went on to fana'iyat. He said, no, I give in. He is the creator. He brought me from nothing. He is the giver. He is the maker. He is the provider. He is everything. I go back to him. I come from him. I go back to him. So it's no point in me going in denial, making up my own mind. One old man, about 71 years of age, so he's got a dream, some 3-4 years now, 3-4 weeks ago, got a dream, I lost my shoe, I'm looking for my shoe high and low. So his dead brother, he appeared in the dream, and the dead brother said, hey, forget your shoe now, and he gave him a mosquito net. So he's asking, what's the meaning of the dream? 71 years of age. So I told him, yeah, you've got a wife, I think, but you're looking for another wife. I say, yeah, boy, but hey, she'll give you problems. What he saw is he's looking for shoes. I went in a different direction, in a different tangent altogether. I told him, I think you're looking for another wife. Yeah, you give me too much of uphill. I can't manage to do this thing anymore now. I want another wife. And what about the mosquito net? So I told him, see, your brother is telling you, but forget the second wife now, just stick around with his wife. Because you're already 71, you're on your way out now. So don't look for another one now, because if you look for one, you look for one 30, 40, you're going to spoil her life just now. You may just, your eating may just end after the 5-6 years. And what this one is going to do? So what he's telling your brother that is dead, what he's passed away, what he's telling you, say, bye, mosquito net, in other words, taqwa. Just observe taqwa now. Restraint. Inshallah, you will move on and move on nicely. Come out of this whole thing. Otherwise, now this one is taking you, giving you uphill. And that one there, 30 years of age, will bring into your marriage, she'll take you downhill just now. Umarji Sahib Rahmatullah used to say, sometimes this old ulama-i kiram, Buzugaradeen, you like their words. If people are talking about second marriage and whatever else. It's not because of need, it's because of greed. Because they don't have the strength. Most of them that are talking about this type of thing, they don't have that physical energy. But they just talk about it, you know, because the Quran has given them that license, so they feel, no, we can use their authority for us. But for their authority, you need some strength as well. Have you got the strength? So anyway, you look at Ismail al-Islam again, and Ibrahim al-Islam again. The command has to come, and straight away, so Ibrahim al-Islam said, no, I don't want to make my own explanation. I have seen this, and he's sharing the dream with his son. And he's sharing the dream with the son, not because he doubts the integrity of his son, not because of that. But he's sharing this with him, so that the son may cooperate in good work with him. He may be an accomplice, so he may also must get the sawab. I'm getting the sawab, and he's getting the sawab. He could have turned around to Allah Ta'ala, you know, Allah Ta'ala, you need to reconsider this whole thing, you see. You see, this son of mine is now, balagha ma'ahu sa'ya. He's so strong, he's able, he's capable. And around that time when he's capable and strong, at this time you are commanding me to put a knife onto his throat. Now he'll do so much of dini work, he'll make tabligh, he'll do so much of things he'll do. And then, you know, Allah Ta'ala, you need to reconsider this whole thing. See, he could have said that, he could have used his own reasoning. But the son is equal to the father, is no less than his father. He says to the father, if al ma tu'mar, do as you've been commanded. Do as you've been commanded. So the father is also in full fana'iyat, and the son is also in full fana'iyat, and then with all that fana'iyat, then to the dua that he's making, both of them are making, Rabbana waj'alna muslimini lak. You look at the meaning of this Islam. If they're asking Allah Ta'ala, what are they asking for? Allah Ta'ala, give us complete fana'iyat. They're also asking the same thing, fana'iyat. The total submission, unquestionable, right? Unconditional. This is the type of fana'iyat and submission that you owe to Allah Ta'ala, unconditional, unquestionable. Then it's a pleasure, it's an enjoyment, it's happiness. Why it happened to me and for, of all people, you know, Allah Ta'ala chose me for this. By leave all the impressions out. Leave it out. Why it happened, Allah Pak knows. So this is a common theme in every leading person, fana'iyat. It's a common theme in everyone, anybody that excelled, that if you look at all, what was the common denominator, what was the common thing in everybody's life, that it was this aspect of fana'iyat. Musa alayhi salam's mother, again, you look at the same aspect, the same feature of fana'iyat. At the time, just on account of a prediction of a soothsayer, that the soothsayer is saying that this person is going to come up from the Bani Israel, and your entire kingdom is going to shift into his hands. So Firaun, he's shaken up. To the roots he's shaken up. Because Badshah ko kis cheez ki fikr hoti, kursi ki fikr hoti hai? The person that is in power, what is worried about? Not worried about everything, life or money or anything else. He's worried about position. That my position must be secure. Then in pursuing his position and securing his position, someone can die, something can happen to anybody else. It's alright, so long as I secure my position. So they're power hungry. You look at anybody, any part of the world, then this is the mentality. It's the mentality that anybody can have anything happen to anybody as long as I've secured my seat, my position. Right. So mercilessly, what the man is doing is grabbing children from the breast of the mother and slaughtering the child in cold blood in the presence of the mother. Can you imagine an atrocity, a zulm worse than that? Cold-blooded from the mother's breast, child is milking, pulled him out, slaughtering in front of the mother. Can you imagine something worse than this? Right. Now, if the believers had gone through difficulty now, right, then they always went through difficulties. The Bani Israel were the Muslim of the time then. And now it's we are the Muslim, with the grace of Allah Ta'ala, we are the Muslims of this time. They were the Muslims of that time. Right? And because Allah Ta'ala wanted some improvement in them, He put them through a trial. Allah Ta'ala wants some improvement from us, so He put us through a trial as well. He wanted something good from them, but for them to earn that, they needed to go through a trial. They'll become the kings of Egypt just now. They'll become the kings of Syria. Similarly, Allah Ta'ala wants some good from this ummah, so He'll put you into a trial. He'll put you into a dry clean, a washing machine. Now you turn, cold water, hot water, detergent, everything is put into you. And you're crying, and the machine is crying, and you are crying. It's taking out the very blood of your system. The machine is taking out everything out of you. Now Allah says, now I'll put you into that position. After you went through all this hammering, all this bashing and smashing, now you are fit for that position. But before that you were dirty, you were filthy, you were not fit for that. So the ummah will have to go through this difficulty for them to become eligible for this position. Now the mother of Musa alayhi salam, obviously she's frantic. Now I got a child, what do I do? Allah Ta'ala sends an inspiration. فَإِذَا خِفْتِ عَلَيْهِ فَأَلْقِيهِ فِي الْيَمْ وَلَا تَخَافِي وَلَا تَحْزَنِ. You take the child, put him into a casket and put him into a river. Now you don't hear of a mother ever taking the child and dumping him to the river. But it's a command, divine command. So no question asked. Again, remember the word, the common theme, unquestionable authority, unconditional authority, is the command of Allah Ta'ala, let it be. So she takes the child, puts him into the casket and throws him into the river. And then she's assigned the affair to Allah Subhanahu Wa Ta'ala, and Allah Ta'ala does what he did. So now, we're talking about Sayyid Ahmad Rifai Rahmatullah Alayh. He is the contemporary of Hazrat Sayyid Abdul Qadir Jilani Rahmatullah Alayh. And he is that same personality for whom the respected honorable hand of Nabi Sallam had come out from the Rawza Mubarak, which 10,000 people had witnessed, which the whole Masjid al-Nabawi had illuminated. This was Sayyid Ahmad Rifai Rahmatullah Alayh. He was such a powerful person. One person comes up to Sayyid Abdul Qadir Jilani Rahmatullah Alayh for his reformation and correction. Sayyid Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh saw the person. He says, I don't think there's any room for improvement in you. You've gone beyond. He summed him up like how a doctor would sum a patient, is in the third stages of cancer now. So he looked at it in that respect, there's no room for this person. Go home, Allah la karo, khatam. This man says, no. A Muslim can't lose hope. He can't lose hope. He can't become despondent. He left Sayyid Abdul Qadir Jilani Rahmatullah and came to Sayyid Rifai Rahmatullah. And in a few months, Sayyid Ahmad Rifai Rahmatullah worked on him. Jab badbakhte wo admi, Allah Taala ke fazl se unko nek bakht bana diya. Where the man was doomed for destruction, right? And he rose in the person and shifted his whole fate from the fate of destruction to a fate of construction. Yeah, it was destruction, now construction, brought him up again. Now, when he sees Sayyid Abdul Qadir Jilani, he is also shocked up. He's shocked up. Say, this man here, like in the third stage of cancer, you know, worst, he can't go, he can't reverse the thing. Irreversible. This yata bas, ye zarfta by Sayyid Ahmad Rifai, he's also my brother, but it was his capacity that he could take on something like this and bring him on back to the cause. But not my capacity. It was this man's capacity. The man was completely off and he brought him back onto the track. So, the statement that I made was of Hazrat Sayyid Ahmad Rifai Rahmatullah. Understand the personality, then understand and appreciate the statement that he makes afterwards. So he says, I've seen the length and the breadth, the highs and the lows, the ups and the downs, the hot and the cold. I've seen everything of this path. Right. I've seen everything of this path, and I've come to the conclusion that there is nothing more expedient that will expedite this journey than fana'iyat. He says about himself, his khadim came up to him one day, and he says, you know, you were the abdal of the time. He says to him, nazih shaykhaka anil abdaliyati, that consider your shaykh to be even superior. Then said, perhaps the kutub said, no, I consider your shaykh to be even greater. And then he went up Ghaus and whatever else. So then the shaykh, the others, murids kept on asking him, right? So when he kept on asking, then he says, you see, all the awliya of the time, Allah Ta'ala had given them and offered them positions. He offered them positions that take this. And he took one position, he took another position, he took another position. But when it came to me and Allah Ta'ala offered me also some position, so I asked Allah Ta'ala, I suggest or I requested, Uridun an la akhtar. Uridu wa akhtaru an la akhtar. Wa uridu an la urid. My request is that I don't want to make a choice of my own. I don't want to make a selection of my own. I'm too weak for that. Allah Ta'ala, I'm a creation. I don't know. You are beyond and beyond. Myself, I'm weaker than weak. I'm nothing to nothing. And you are everything of everything. And I'm nothing of nothing. So, فَأَعْطَانِي مَا لَا عَيْنٌ رَأَتْ وَلَا أُذُنٌ سَمِعَتْ says Allah Pak, then bless me with a position that nobody have heard of in that zamana. Allah Pak, bless me with that type of a position. So all this came with, again, the same aspect of fana'iyat. I'm just trying to illustrate this aspect of fana'iyat, what it is all about. You know, we hear about fana'iyat, fana'iyat, fana'iyat. Then it's another name for Islam. And total surrender, unquestionable and unconditional. Just give it in. It's a command of Allah Ta'ala. Why are you doing qurban? Allah Ta'ala command. I don't need to know anything. I don't need to know the philosophy of it. I don't need to know the wisdom. You gave me, mashallah, it's an additional thing, but I don't really need to know about it. It's a command of Allah Ta'ala, but let it be. See? If you go on for Umrah or something and your wife is at home, right, for example, and she says to you, you know, in whichever language, in love language, love or whatever, darling, whatever, says, do you think of me? And you tell, what do you think of me? And then, as a surprise, what you will do? As a surprise, just as a token of love, you will phone up the florist, local florist, send a bouquet of flowers, 10,000 rands, and just go and give it to her. Deliver. If Allah put you into that bracket, I suppose. Eh? Not everybody, no? Right. Now, at that time, you will not say, you know, hey, this is stupidity or madness. This bouquet of flowers, after 2 weeks, that is going to be all rotten, withered away, all going to be thrown away in the garbage. You don't want to say that. Will you say that? You don't want to say that. The love, it blocks off your intelligence completely. And it surpasses, it goes over your intelligence, the love. Love will prevent you from reasoning and rationale. That is why it's a debated thing. It's a debated thing. What is greater? Reasoning is greater or love? What is greater? Is reasoning greater or love? You know, you got iman, and that iman, you got it flavored in such a way that it's flavored with love. and the other iman is flavored with reason. So what, which iman is better? So Gangohi Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi, he says that whilst as long as you are alive, as long as you are around strong and all that, that iman must be flavored with reasoning. Because if it's just love, love is overwhelming you, what's going to happen? Right. You just want to read namaz, you can't stand it, whether it's makruh time, haram time, non-haram time. You are so overwhelmed with love, muhabbat. Muhabbat ki shan hai, muhabbat ki ek shan hota hai. Muhabbat's got a language of its own, you just want to give it, give and give and give. You got money, you just want to give and give and give. You're worried about your wife, children, this one, that one. No, the love is so active in you, it's overactive. So there must be muhabbat, but what must be the overwhelming factor? The overwhelming factor must be reasoning and rationale. But and as you approach death at the last 11th hour, at that 11th hour, then it mustn't be the reasoning. Then it must be love. Hey, love Allah. Now I can't resist Allah. I want to meet you, Allah. I can't resist now. Allah, I had enough now. I don't want to be around Allah. I want to meet you. وَشَوْقًا إِلَىٰ لِقَائِكَ. See. Now what a beautiful explanation on how he brought the whole thing out. Love and reasoning. Love and reasoning and how to reconcile the both. That is why. Mawlana Azaz Ali Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh was one of the senior ulama in Darul Uloom Deoband, contemporary of Hazrat Shaykh al-Islam Hussain Ahmad Madani Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh. So there is a discussion between the Hanafis and the Shafi'is, right? There's a discussion that in namaz, where should be the hands folded? Below the navel or above the navel? The Shafi'is say that it should be folded above the navel on the chest. Right? While the Hanafi says below the navel. Right? So they say, the Shafi'is, they got hadith, etc. But supported with the hadith, they've got hadith, not that they don't have hadith, but supported an additional strength to the hadith, is they say that namaz mazhara ishq hai. Namaz is an expression of love. Is an expression of love. And when you're expressing love, then you have your hand on the chest. Right? What's the proof for that? The proof for that is, you see, most people in the meeting, do you see or not? So they're saying, what they're saying, teri muhabbat mere dil mein hai. Your muhabbat is in my heart. That's what he's doing. It's just a routine, right? People have seen from the grandfathers, whatever. But what they are saying, that your love is in my heart. I'm sincere about it. My love is sincere for you. So, doesn't he do it? So he says, namaz is an expression of love. Therefore, my dear love, Allah Ta'ala, you speak to Allah Ta'ala with love. You see, their reasons are very sound. You can't fault them. The reasons are very powerful, very, very strong. And Abu Hanifa rahmatullah, and he in his whole exercise, he says, see, he quotes a poetry of Mutanabbi, right? حَوَلْنَا تَفْدِيَتِي وَخِفْنَا الْمُرَاقِبَ وَوَضَعْنَا أَيْدِيَهُنَّ فَوْقَ تَرَائِبِ. Now Mutanabbi is a poet, right? Now, poets, they live in the land of imagination. They asman zameen ko mila dete. When they praise someone also, they praise so high, they go and praise. Like mad, they go and praise. And they want to disgrace someone, they go and disgrace someone as well. So that's poetry, right? Poetry. They don't have any deen in them as such. But the poetry, they have made it their hobby, they have made it their life. So now, Mutanabbi is talking now that he is in a caravan, and there is another caravan of girls, right? That's accompanied with one of the elders, and they've all come up to an oasis, like our ultra shell, you know. In our language, ultra shell, they all come up there. Now, he's a free man, right? He's not a deity person, so he's going to talk in a free language. So he says, in some sign language, we indicated that we interested in each other, right? حَوَلْنَا تَفْدِيَتِي وَخِفْنَا الْمُرَاقِبَ. They, in the sign language, right. They showed that they're really frantic about me, you know. Now, really, when a man speaks like that, really, those girls don't love him. But the small little move that she made, that person goes head over heels. She may have scratching her head, like, you know, I say, hey, you see what? You see that she stink up as though she, her memory, you know, her memory has been all enlightened because of it. So that's why she put the hand there. Maybe the hand was scratching at that time. I don't know when his headache came. But he misconstrued it to his convenience, right? So what he says, they just want to offer themselves to me. They want to offer themselves to me. But in the meanwhile, with every jamaat, right, every woman jamaat, you have some guardian, right, some police, I guess. When you have police with a woman jamaat, you have nobody takes a chance with them. So they want to offer themselves to me, but they're afraid of the police that is with them. They're afraid, you know, they have to calculate the moves, they have to be very cautious. But as a token of love, what they did, just to show, you know, we're still on with you, what they did, وَوَضَعْنَا أَيْدِيَهُنَّ فَوْقَ تَرَائِبِ. Then just as a token of love, they placed their hands on their chests. So now, this is the support of Imam Shafi rahmatullahi. I'm just adding this with his poetry. Right? It's not that it's a dalil, it's not a proof, but it's just a support. Imam Abu Hanifa rahmatullahi, when he talks about namaz, he says namaz is an expression of respect, greatness and majesty of Allah Ta'ala, flavored very highly with love. It's flavored with love, but not overwhelmed. More for the greatness, the azmat, and the majesty of Allah Ta'ala. And the proof for it is, see, in namaz now, you're not looking this side, you're not looking that side. You're calm, you're not jumping. And when a person is in love, what he's going to do? Can he stand still? He's going to be jiving from one side to the other, he's going to be jumping, hopping and all that. Yeah, you can't. You just stand still, look at one place. You're going to come in with wuzu, you come in with respect. Don't just walk anyhow. You're going to brush your teeth. You come in an orderly way, apply some itar and come into the masjid, come and sit in the first serf. See? Then, your standing posture, you've got about 11 sunnahs to be concerned about when you're in the standing posture. Just 11 sunnahs, where you're going to stand, how you're going to stand, how you're going to keep your feet, how you're going to keep your hands, where's your face, gaze going to be, how is your neck going to be. So all those things you have to keep in mind. So now all this, is it pertaining to love or greatness? It's pertaining to greatness. When you stand in court now, for example, you have to remove your hat, right? And you have to stand in a certain way and say your majesty, whatever other words you have to say. But what is this? Is it because you love the magistrate or it is because of his respect? You keep his respect in mind and you show him that type of regards. So the Hanafi say this, that it's an expression of respect, but highly flavored with love. That sometimes you're diving into sajda, sometimes you're coming up, again you're going, Allah Akbar, repeatedly. I want this, and I want it again and again. But alright, I got a limitation, only two, in every namaz, every rakat, just two times. Like as though you sing another, I can kiss you, but just twice in every namaz. You want to, in love, don't you want to kiss? Hajar Aswad, don't you go and kiss? So you sing Allah Akbar, I want to kiss you, but just twice I can do it. I can't do it more because then I'm restricted with time. So it's highly flavored with love. Anyway, our time is up now. We are talking about this fana'iyat, and I spoke about Sayyid Ahmad Rifai rahmatullahi. Now, the question that you will ask now, then how do we get to this level of fana'iyat? Right? We spoke about fana'iyat, right? We spoke about the goal. But how do you go? How do you score the goal? You understood that this is the goal, but you have to make those maneuvers in order to get to the goal. What maneuvers must you make? So he's given a 3-point plan. The 3-point plan that he's given is, number one, unrestricted kindness, unconditional kindness. Kindness, but unconditional. I am working for example, I'm working for Hafiz, right? So Hafiz is seeing me write every month, 500 rand, 1000 rand. But that's a little bit of like a conditional kindness. Because hey, we're also enjoying from this man, let him also enjoy. We are enjoying from this man here. So let him also enjoy. Give him, let's throw another 1000 rand, never mind. Right. So this is conditional. See, for example, he leaves employment. Now will I get the 1000 rand? So the 1000 rand was just because he is good with us, so we should be also good with him. So it's conditional. Now unconditional kindness. You're getting a tamasha from the next person. You're getting a slap from the next person. But you, in return, you slap, you're kissing his hand. Ahsin ila man asa'a ilayk. Man has been rude towards you. He's been aggressive towards you. He's been unkind towards you. He's impolite. But you're replying it with kindness. with gestures of love, with sincerity replying his aggression, unconditional kindness. Then unconditional endurance, unconditional kindness and unconditional endurance. The Sayyid Ahmad Rifai Rahmatullahi, one person is seeing in the dream that Allah Ta'ala has posted him fi maq'adi sidqin 'inda maliki muqtadir, a very high position. He comes in to meet her, Sayyid Ahmad Rifai Rahmatullahi. So as he's waiting there, he's hearing some fireworks are carrying on. Somebody's catching it very badly with a stick, you know. Then he learned that his wife was giving it to him. So Hazrat, by you, it's not your place to take this hiding. I'll offer you my daughter, but you know, it's not for you to take this hiding. And he was about to shout the wife. So the Sayyid Ahmad Rifai Ram is saying, now he didn't know about this dream, yeah, but Sayyid Ahmad Rifai Ram is saying, you see that dream that you saw about in the Maliki Muqtadir, fi Maqadi Sidq, is because of this endurance. So you want me to be deprived of the position? No, I will endure all this, but I know what I'm getting in. I know the price that I'm paying and what I will get in return. Inshallah, some other time we'll continue this.